Moonshine, like that?
No. You want to say it again?
That's it. What's the deal with moonshine?
Moonshine is turning up in watering holes all around the country, and it's coming here in our studio. The guys of Belle Isle Moonshine, we have Vince Riggi and Brian Marks. They've created this new, beautiful moonshine. We're going to find out more about moonshine, what it is, why it's become so popular, and how to mix it up.
And how you don't have to make it in your tub anymore.
Right, exactly. And Chef Ethan McKee, he's back in studio with us. He is now at Urbana at the Kimpton Hotel at the Palomar in DuPont Circle, and they just did a tremendous renovation. So we're going to get the 411 on that.
And the boys who put the Wild in Wilder are here. Ari and Micah Wilder, you've been on the show a bunch of times. The fancy word for them is mixologists. The unfancy term is guys who like booze,
right.
I guess is the way of putting that. They're now part of the team that's running Chaplin, which opened last July in Shaw, and they're in to mix up a bunch of mocktails since we're the people that run this station will not let us do cocktails anymore. Boo to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to talk about the new guy in charge of Chaplin's Kitchen, whose name I can't pronounce. Pronounce it for me.
Mio.
Yeah, that.
Mio.
Mio.
That
Mio
was really Mio. Hard.
Mio. All right, so you two rascals, let's talk to you guys first. I guess first thing is talk about the new move in the kitchen, because Chaplin opened last July, right?
Yeah.
This July, like
this,
just
that's
like
what I mean.
A couple months ago.
Last July was this July.
I know, but it sounds like you
this
mean like
July
a year
would be next
like
July.
Year
July.
Yeah,
it
thank you.
It feels like a year.
I think
really,
she's been sniffing
really
moonshine.
Us.
I get started early.
So basically, we've been waiting for our master from Tokyo. Mio, who's extremely talented. We have an interpreter in the kitchen because his English is broken.
It's like all the pitchers for the Texas Rangers. I like
it's very exciting.
It's a very good relationship. Yes. He doesn't talk a lot. We talk a lot.
Yeah,
understand
but
what
he does.
I hadn't noticed.
He's a very keen eye.
All right.
But explain, Chaplin. What's the concept?
The concept, if you don't mind.
One of you has to talk.
The concept is basically it's a cinematic experience based on silent film. So back in the beginning of the cinematic era, the boom, there was no language barriers. So that's when East met West in the 1920s in Shanghai and Tokyo. So we decided to combine them with that swanky 1920s cocktail bar that, you know, we're known for our cocktails and we love to make them.
You are known for your cocktails.
And for being swanky.
Yeah.
Here and there, I got a little swag.
But Chef's amazing. Really, really good ramen. Awesome dumplings.
Wonderful.
Super authentic. He does everything the way that he would do it for. I mean, he cooks for Chaplin the way that he would cook for his own family.
You've been there already?
No, I haven't been.
Yeah,
Nikki's been there like five times.
So
Nikki, she comes like twice a week.
I can say this. Screw you guys. That's not one of the words I can't say.
I'll send you an invite.
Right. You want to give me more trouble than I'm already in? Come on.
But we are open like late night now, so we're basically like the new neighborhood gathering. Late night watering hole and restaurant in Shaw.
But one of our sons lives down there. Isn't that near Jake?
Jason lives near there.
Nice. We love the neighborhood.
Yeah, the kitchen. Awesome. Kitchen's open until 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we're open 7 nights a week till last call. So,
well, tell us about your cocktail program.
It's
a little bit. You know, we can't go into all of it. Why don't you just tell us what you're making first, and then we'll go back to your cocktail program.
You guys talk a lot.
I'm really good at talking.
Okay.
But anyways, our cocktails we're featuring today are basically based on what we serve at our place.
Without alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. They're called Empty Promises because we make them. We all make them.
Empty Promises?
Yeah, because there's
Micah's not a very good relationship guy. I make a lot
That's
of promises.
That's true. I've heard that
My
about
promises
you.
Promises are full and fulfilling.
So all right, so what's in it?
Three Empty Promises. One is a blend of... it's a cucumber-based, like summer breezer.
Mm-hmm.
The second is a B-grade maple syrup for the raw wildness of the B-grade.
And ginger.
And ginger.
Cornberry grapefruit juice, fresh lime.
And grapefruit to cool off the sugar from the maple.
And the last one's the Limelight, which is a house-pickled watermelon and pineapple cocktail with apple and lemon and...
And I brought some champagne I'm going to be drinking while I'm making my empty.
Okay.
No, you did not.
Fine.
It's ginger beer.
Which one are you pouring first?
We're going to start off
with
the Limelight.
All right, go do that.
Look it up, buddy.
And let's get into Matt. Can you speak or do you have too much food in your
hand? No, he's good.
No.
All right, so Matt Adler's the executive chef at Osteria Marini down on the Southwest Waterfront.
Southeast Waterfront.
Southeast Waterfront. Southeast, Southwest. I'm from Bethesda. Who knows, right? But the place is taking... that place by storm. Big crowds, great views, great food. Why don't you give us a little background on you first?
I moved down here from New York City back in last September to open the restaurant. I lived down here about 10 years ago. I've always really loved D.C. And when this opportunity came up, I thought it was I thought it'd be a great move for my wife and I.
But were you already with the chef?
I've been with Michael White and Altamira Group on and off for about 5 years.
Okay. And so, but were you with the Osteria Marini up in New York City?
I did. I spent a lot of I've worked probably in all of the in all of Michael's restaurants at one point or another.
And so coming to D.C. and launching this, what? Do you have a question? You're looking at me. No?
I do have a question.
Okay, why don't you ask your question?
Well, I want to make sure if people are listening, if they haven't been to the restaurant, they really get what you guys are doing. So we'll get to that. You were going to ask a question.
I was going to ask a question about what they do at the
what
restaurant.
What do you do? So, Matt, I'm sorry, we've run out of time. But leave your ice cream and go. No, talk about it, because obviously it's Italian. It sounds Italian. What do you got there?
Sure. We focus on Emilia-Romagna, so the north of Italy. Our food program, I'd say the most important thing about the restaurant is pasta. That's the one thing that kind of everybody comes from.
About life.
Everybody knows. I mean, if you come to Marini and you don't have a bowl of pasta, then I think you're really missing out. We even do gluten-free pasta in-house, so we really have options for everybody.
I think.
But for people who aren't familiar with that region, can you explain so what those kinds of sauces are like and what the kind of food is
sure,
like
absolutely.
And some of the specialties that you're bringing to the table there?
So a lot of the traditional ingredients you know of as Italian food, so prosciutto di Parma and Parmigiano Reggiano, balsamic vinegar, those are from Emilia-Romagna. So those are highlighted throughout the menu.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were stolen from Tuscany, don't you?
I don't think
some
so.
Some of us who are Firenze files.
Tuscany has great ingredients, but those specifically
nice try.
Are from
it's too late. I'm hurt. I'm hurt now.
And so what's up with this big event you guys are doing? Give us the 411.
So Maya Lazza, we wanted to have a big end of summer barbecue just to celebrate. And, you know, we had such a great first summer down here. We kind of wanted to give something back to the community. We wanted mm-hmm. to highlight this great charity that we're working with, and we wanted to serve delicious food and just have a really good time.
All right. Well, maiale is pig in Italian, so this is a big pig roast, yeah?
It is, yeah.
So how are you doing it?
So
are you doing like a china box? What are you going to do?
No, we have the capability in the restaurant to roast smaller suckling pigs whole, mm-hmm. and then we're going to finish them on wood-burning grills outside.
You kill them first, fun. Right? You
know. Well,
jeez.
We don't like to talk about that.
Barbaric so early on a Sunday morning.
That's right.
Oh my God. No, they're going to throw them on the grills live.
But that's all, folks.
Oh my God.
All right. So, what else aside from the pig roast? What else will go with it?
Well, kind of traditional picnic food. So, we're going to do a pasta salad, but it'll be with house made gramigna and mm-hmm. fresh mozzarella and cherry tomatoes.
Sounds good.
We'll do charred corn on the grill with Parmigiano fonduta. And we're also making four different kinds of ice cream sandwiches.
Some of which we're having.
Yes.
So Alex Levin, who's been in studio before, these are his creations.
Yes,
tell us about them. They're delicious, Alex.
So in front of us, we have traditional brownie with vanilla gelato and then a soft-baked chocolate chip cookie with mint gelato.
They're delicious. I wasn't expecting the mint when I bit into it, and it's really lovely.
Well, the great thing about this recipe is it infuses fresh mint, so there's no artificial flavors or colors in there. So you mm-hmm. don't really... When you bite into it, you don't expect it.
You don't expect it. It's a nice surprise. Well, let's talk about where the Osteria is, because it's not far from Nat Stadium. But for people who haven't been down that to that area, I mean, there's that beautiful expansive plaza. There's so much going on down there. Was that a surprise for you?
It was. The first time I came down here, I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. It was explained to me, but it's the area is so up and coming. It's so hot right now. It's... when you get down there, you don't realize what you're walking into until you see the beautiful waterfront, you see the boardwalk.
But even more than that, that's what was smart about you guys and Neighborhood Restaurant Group with Blue Jacket. They were able to see
the
beyond
potential.
The horizon. Because I know the guys from the bid, and I remember when they're making the plans, I was like, nobody's ever going there. I mean,
there was nothing
dead
there.
Waterfront. It was horrible. And now it's stunning. And Nikki, yesterday.
Well, no, when we were there Friday night, because we were at Osteria Marini on Friday night, there was a huge event going on outside, and there were all these strollers and people mm-hmm. with dogs, and they were doing picnics. I just couldn't believe what was going on down there. And it's so pretty. you know, the architecture of it all is really beautiful. It's laid out well.
It is. They really did a great job down there. The infrastructure they're building to support it, you know, the restaurants, I think last year 4 or 5 different restaurants opened down there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a great area. I mean, we're really excited to be part of it.
Come alive again. It's
well, and it doesn't rely on the stadium to bring people in.
It doesn't.
Right?
I mean, that the stadium's great.
I'm sure on days it's totally different. But I'm sure you get 2 different clientele.
We do.
You have non-stadium days and stadium days.
We do. We've been very lucky. We pull from Capitol Hill a lot, so we get senators. We get congressmen. It's a 5-minute cab ride from downtown, so it's not as far as you think it is.
I'm a future senator, so you can mention me in that.
Great, congratulations.
Let's talk a little about Brain Food. We got about 2 minutes left.
Sure.
We know Paul Dahm and we know that group well. Why'd you pick Brain Food?
It's just a great charity that kind of supports the same ideals that we have. I mean, anything with food, obviously, we're behind 100%. But to teach young people life skills through cooking, we thought that was a great charity.
Well, yeah, they're great. And I mean... The great thing is that they're doing inner city farming and they're teaching folks some of whom don't even have access to fresh food how to grow their own food in vacant lots and all that, and it's really an amazing operation. Yeah,
and it's a focus on healthy living and not so much about the cooking, but more about teaching people the skills and how to go about their daily lives.
Right. Tell everybody how to get tickets.
We have to wrap it up.
Out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Go to osteriamarini.com and there is a link under Washington D.C.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks for the delicious treats.
These are great, yeah.
All right, everybody get your tickets. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Lean Six Sigma has been around a long time, but what are the results for federal programs and agencies? Republican Congressman Tom Latham and Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar are sponsoring new legislation to boost process improvement efforts. On September 9th, you have a rare opportunity to join them and process improvement experts from across government in a Capitol Hill event to discuss what their bill means for agencies. Sponsored by the National Academy of Public Administration and Federal News Radio, to sign up, visit NapaWash.org or email rcodat@NapaWash.org.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up.
For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Speaking of AARP.
Yeah, no kidding.
I just joined. God help me. All right, so we're back. Let's go back to the Wilders for a couple of minutes. Guys, tell us more about the cocktail lineup at Chaplin.
So we like to balance things consistently on draft. So we're going to be at 13 drafty spirits. Not, we don't like calling them cocktails on tap. Drafty spirits is what we go by.
Okay. Are you trademarking
Thank
that?
Thank you for making that distinction.
Yeah, okay. It is a very big distinction.
Everyone was definitely about to ask that question.
Okay, go
for
ahead.
Sure.
But we're mysterious. I like, you know, to be original.
You both are a mystery to me, I can tell you that.
We're just pushing the bar, and Ari and I balance everything ourselves, so the consistency is there, and no one has to wait for a great cocktail. You
know? So all of them are on tap?
Most of the right now there's about 7 or 8 on tap. We're mm-hmm. going to around 13 to 14. Which will be on draft. So, I mean, very, very quick cocktails, but but made properly every single time because we make them, we batch them out ourselves.
And we decorate them ourselves.
How much goes into an on tap?
About 5 liters.
Okay, so how long does that last?
A couple of the cocktails that are really popular, like a Vagabond, which is where
depends on how drunk the crowd is.
No, I'm just sort of curious. I think it's such an interesting concept.
Some of them will last through the night. Usually, some of them will have to back up one or two times normally.
Okay, I mean, don't you think it's interesting?
They're just really popular.
What a two Vagabonds from Bethesda. What a life you guys live.
It's actually it's Potomac.
It's California.
Hello, it's Potomac.
Sorry, dude. All right, so
North Bethesda.
So now we're speaking of calories.
What are you pouring next? Oh. More importantly.
So this one's the Limelight. This is with the house pickled watermelon and pineapple. The next one's the Vagabond, which is the cucumber water, ginger beer, and fresh lemon. And then the last one is a...
The last one's a city lights.
It's a B-grade maple ginger, fresh ruby red, grapefruit, and lime.
Sounds terrible. Okay.
Terrible.
Drive carefully, kids.
We'll be back to you guys in a little bit, but you can pour the next one.
Jessica Merchant, are you there? Uh-oh.
Hello?
Jessica, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, good
morning.
Welcome to Foodie and the Beast.
Morning.
How are you?
Well, how are you?
We're good. All right, everybody, this is Jessica Merchant, who writes the very famous blog, How Sweet Eats, and she's author of a new cookbook called Serious Delish.
Delish.
I just stepped over my tongue. Seriously Delish. And it's my kind of cookbook, I got to tell you, because... food is clearly your passion, and calories be damned, and I dig that because I'm always getting trouble for my prodigious belly from my wife here. So, based on your book, you grew up with Pop-Tarts and Lucky Charms, and I won't do my Irish accent for you. I'll spare
Please
you
don't.
That.
I kind of did.
Everybody always wants me Lucky Charms.
Oh, my God.
How did you make the jump from, you know, digging into processed foods to creating your own recipes? First good question.
A gradual thing, you know, like as I got older in my 20s, I realized that stuff didn't make me feel good. And then also it's just, I find like such beauty in food that I wanted to work with it. You know, I wanted to use the local produce that we have and use those fresh ingredients. And that's kind of what my taste buds are geared towards more anyway. I mean, I love to indulge in desserts and sweets, but I love, like, the beautiful presentation of food just as much as I love the taste of it. So that kind of, like, guided me into, you know, wanting to use it and make my own recipes.
Well, let's talk about how you started making your own recipes. I mean, I know I've read through your book, and as, you know, you had this love for food growing up. But when did you really start playing in the kitchen?
Probably not until I got married, because my mom, I mean, she made dinner every single night. Like, there were three kids. We rarely went out to eat, so she made dinner all the time. So I didn't really have, like, control of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were busy. We were active, so we weren't really helping her make dinner often. It was something she liked to do. So once I was married and in my own kitchen, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I can monopolize this whole space and do whatever the heck I want, you know, that's when things really started, and a lot of trial and error and just, you know, playing around, because I get bored easily, you know, product of the internet generation.
I
get bored within, like, 5 minutes, so I always am looking to try something.
Well, don't get bored with this interview yet. We've got 6 more minutes to go.
Well, Jessica, let me ask you, why – I'm always fascinated, because I love cookbooks and I love food magazines, and I love to cook, and I do it an awful lot. And in fact, a lot of the things you talk about in your book, I felt we were very similar on. I'm huge into quinoa right now and the coconut oil. Like, I felt like there were a lot of parallels in what you were doing. But I'm a recipe follower. I love recipes. I'm not a recipe maker. So how did you go? What took you on that route?
Well, that's kind of interesting, because I am more of a person that, like, I hate to follow directions.
Uh-huh.
So I am more of a cook than a baker, because, you know, I love to indulge. I love to make sweets every now and then, but I hate to follow those directions.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was just a lot of trial and error, and like the desire for always wanting to try, you know, different foods and different recipes, just started me, you know, trying to throw my own twists on classic dishes, I'd say that that's really how I started. Like, I take those nostalgic classic dishes that, like, my mom made when I was growing up or my grandmother made for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, want to take them and maybe either lighten them up a little bit or try it with a slightly different flavor or, you know, something like that. So, I mean, it's definitely a trial and error process, and I have failed in disasters all the time. But that's like the biggest thing that I want people to take away from it is that, you know, you really can make any recipe your own.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to, you know, think like, what do I like? And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. And
well,
go with the flow.
But here's the question, because, you know, reading through that, you really kind of are a champion for, you know, the more calories, the better kind of eating. And that sounds like you're opening the gateway to junk food heaven, but some of your recipes look very healthy with, you know, the grains and the fresh product and all that. So how do we cut the middle ground between delicious self-indulgence and unhealthy self-abuse, which I'm into, by the way?
Oh, we'd be friends. I definitely think that it's so cliche. It's the annoying cliche that nobody wants to hear, but it really is all about moderation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, eating a ton of junk food and a ton of sweets and desserts just usually, I know it makes me feel like garbage, and it makes most people feel like garbage. So I do think there's, you know, that balance. Like, I feel that, you know, my husband and I have, like, a fairly healthy diet because we do eat everything. You know, we do eat vegetables, but we do eat chocolate. You know, we do eat quinoa and, you know, whole wheat pasta, but we also eat, you know, kale and Brussels sprouts. And I really think that it
sounds like our diet.
But you sort of
am I your husband?
Wait a second.
No.
But you sort of say in your book that you really don't like vegetables, and yet you really have. But you layered a lot. There's a lot of greens layered in your recipes. So how did you transfer your palate?
I've had to force myself, and I still do have to force myself. That's why I wanted to include a good amount of vegetable recipes in the book, because I'm like, if I can eat vegetables this way, I feel like almost anybody can.
Okay.
You know, because I didn't grow up loving them. They're still not, you know, the number one thing I want to order.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if I'm out at a restaurant or that I'm in the grocery store, I want to pick out. But first of all, like, they make me feel good. And I know that I can't just eat like a teenager. And I have to, you know, I know that we have to.
Did you hear that? You know? You just can't eat like a teenager.
No, suddenly my headphones were turned off.
And so I think that it's just, I like the weird vegetables. I like kale. I like Brussels sprouts. I like the things that people don't eat. I don't know if maybe like my palate leans like a little bit like tart and bitter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You sound like my wife, tart and bitter. Sorry. It was just too good an opening. I had to.
I'm okay with that.
I gave you that one. I gave it to you.
I don't know why she's so bitter. She's the luckiest woman on earth. But anyways, back to you.
I can't imagine why I'm bitter.
So, but how did all this get started? When did you start How Sweet Eats and, you know, all the blogging? And I guess, you know, I mean, it must have blown your mind when it took off the way it did. Why'd you start writing?
I started it in 2009. I've always loved to write. I was stuck at a job that I really didn't like, and not only that, I didn't have much to do. I was stuck behind a desk, so I was, like, on the computer all day with just staring at a screen from 8 to 5, and it was just my worst nightmare. It was everything I said that I would never do. I stumbled across blogs, and I'd always loved to write, so I started my own, and, you know, I didn't tell anybody about it for a few weeks because I was horrified, and then it did take off, but it definitely wasn't, like, one massive jump.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very gradual, you know, a gradual lift with that I believe really just happened because, like, I was consistent and I really loved to do it and had a passion for it and still have a passion for it. I'm such an all or nothing person, and if I didn't have a passion for it, I couldn't do it. So it just kind of, you know, it was really cool to see it take off, but I just loved building that community on my site, and that's really why I do it. And I love the relationship that I have with, you know, the readers of my blog. And
well, let's talk about the engagement with your readers. I mean, do they comment on your recipes? Do they offer suggestions? I mean, do you collaborate with any of them?
Oh, my gosh, I totally do. I mean, a lot of my recipes over the years have been, and I may even write it out in the blog post I usually do, is because, you know, a reader emailed me their favorite recipe, or, you know, someone was talking about in the comments of a post, you know, I tried this and you need to try it. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of requests from people that are like, I had this amazing dish at a restaurant and I have no idea how to recreate it, but it has this and this, and maybe you can do it. So a lot of my inspiration comes from that and comes from them. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's by far my favorite part is just interacting with them. And, you know, I'm getting to meet them in person now because I'm doing some events with the book. And that's, like, what it's all about. I love that.
You know, are you coming to D.C.?
I am. In November, I believe, is it the National Press Club Book Fair?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, November 18th, I think.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yeah. I am, yeah. So in 2 months, I'll be there, but I'm
right.
Not DC, so.
I just hope you're still on your feet after eating brown sugar bacon biscuits and all of that. Because
I'll lay off for a week before I come.
Well, yeah, just a little bit. What do, if you were going to point to a couple of your favorite recipes in the book, what would be your two favorite?
Okay, two favorites. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm a bad favorite person because, you know, they're always changing. I'm always looking for the next best thing.
Of course.
But since I'm trying to savor a little bit of summer, we still have, you know, we're in the same climate as you guys are. We still have some good corn and tomatoes produce here.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the barbecue chicken and sweet corn pizza.
I saw that.
It's like Tex-Mex and pizza chapter.
That sounds good.
Mm-hmm. I also really love the roasted beets and honey and goat cheese salad.
Mm-hmm.
That's like probably my husband's favorite recipe. And I love because you can get the golden beets and the red beets. And not only does it look super pretty, but it's delicious.
Yes.
All right. Well, we've got about 40 seconds. Want to mm-hmm. make sure we know Seriously Delish is available, bookstores, online, et cetera. Hit it.
Yes, correct. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, anywhere books are sold.
And where can we find you online?
My blog is at howsweeteats.com.
Okay, great. Jessica, thank you. What?
And
do you have something
more
to say?
It's a really pretty book.
It's very pretty.
I like this book.
The photographs
thank
are
you.
Beautiful. Jessica,
thank you
so much for joining us this morning. When you come to D.C., you should stop by and say hi.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Thanks so much. David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
The federal government produces massive amounts of information every day, but most of it's useless beyond the agency that produces it because it's not available in a usable format. That's starting to change. With the passage of the Data Act, the first steps have been taken. But what's next? Join the Data Transparency Coalition and Workiva September 30th for Data Transparency 2014, the preeminent gathering of leaders from Congress, the executive branch, and industry to find out what's next for data transparency and open data. Register today at datatransparency2014.org.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we have those wild and crazy Wilder brothers here, Micah and Ari. I got a question for you because, you know, it's like chefs do it and rock stars do it. You know, you can get too much exposure.
What are you talking about?
Ecstasy. No, and get too spread thin. So my question is, because you guys have been on a ton of times and you've developed a lot of cocktail programs for a lot of different, you know, bars and restaurants, is there ever a danger that you, like, repeat yourselves? I mean...
That's actually something I wake up every day and look in the mirror and say I'm not going to do.
Okay.
Like, you really do that?
I really do. That's kind of weird. Crazy.
You know, I wake up and look in the mirror and go, "I'm not eating that fat crap."
He's definitely waking up and taking selfies and talking.
Yeah, I really, I don't. I really.
We have very different morning routines.
Or I say, Nikki, I'll never try that again. I promise.
We like to raise the bar, and sometimes we falter here and there. But I don't like regurgitating recipes.
He said regurgitating.
Well, we used to be consultants before we became our cocktail bar owners, and. The fear, when you sell something to someone, it should always be unique and original. So it was just something we naturally were born into, I suppose.
But how do you tinker with it? How do you take, like, a great cocktail you do?
You just play. I mean, everything.
I'm laughing because I see you guys in, like, the backseat of the car at 16. We were born to do this. Give me another Colt 45.
Yeah, that happened.
I believe it was malt liquor at that point. We just play around with. So everything is very specific to the actual space and concept and culinary direction. So that's sort of where we start, is like, what's the chef cooking with? What are the ingredients?
Do you keep
primarily?
Records of everything so you can go back and look and see what you
and
do?
And that's the cool thing, is that we never actually revisit previous cocktails to make new ones. We just literally start from scratch. And that's what I think is continues to, you know, perpetuate this kind of originality that it's not to pat ourselves on the back or anything, but just like, we really are inspired by the chef and the...
Oh, your brother's patting you on the back.
Somebody better pat you on the back.
Someone has to. He's taking selfies.
Can you guys spell narcissism, by the way?
I don't know what that means.
Well, let me ask a question. So Mio's in there, doesn't speak English. How do you communicate with him?
He speaks broken. I mean, he's very, very driven in his kitchen. He kind of runs the show. And the reason that we were able to get him from Ren's Ramen in Maryland, and so
we go there all the time.
That's the executive chef is Mio. He's not a hard executive chef.
I love Ren's Ramen.
Yeah, so we were able to take him from there only because he was with them for 7 years after he got here from Japan. Only because we told him that the kitchen was entirely under his control, and whatever he wanted to do, we wanted him to do, and we didn't want him to Americanize it. We really wanted him to make it as authentic as humanly possible.
Do you guys sync up with the cocktails?
We do. We use a lot of, like, some of the drunken dumpling shooters and stuff like that.
What are those? Can you explain those?
The shrimp and chicken shumai is injected with different cocktails. We use, like, actual, like, needle kind of, like, baster injectors that we inject into the actual dumplings after they're plated, so they're already cooked. It doesn't cook the alcohol out, and it's actually like a boozy dumpling. It's like doing an oyster shooter.
It's like getting animal style at.
Does it work?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when a woman looks at you and goes, "You baster," you're not
shumai me.
I'm all about the. I tell her I'm her master.
You're not offended. That's good. All right. So you're mixing up something else, and we got now we're going to be talking.
Now we're going to be talking moonshine.
So Brian Marks and Vince Riggi are two of, I guess, three partners behind Belle Isle Craft Spirits Premium Moonshine. And I giggled a little because premium and moonshine sound, you know, a little like an oxymoron.
Sure.
Which is part of a word that my wife calls me all the time. The moron.
The oxy.
Don't call me an oxy.
But here's.
Do you think that's a word I would really
let's
use?
Let's talk about the.
Yes.
It's too big a word for you. Let's talk about. Thank you. What a setup. Let's talk about moonshine. Because moonshine historically was backwoods, back of the lot, hidden. It was what people brewed to get drunk when Prohibition was.
Sure.
Or when they didn't have access to bottled, you know, spirits. Right. So
what's your question?
Well, why moonshine? How is moonshine making a big comeback now?
Sure.
It's crazy.
Sure. Well, first, all moonshine really is just an untaxed spirit. So we're paying homage to the almost original craft spirit, the spirit that people have been making for centuries, not just in America, but all over the world. In other countries, it's called something a little different, like in Eastern Europe and countries like Serbia or Greece, it's called raki.
I was in Istanbul for a week. It seemed like a month. I mean,
But what is it? What is moonshine? Because some people are like, it's vodka. No, it's white whiskey. Yeah, is it?
So we started out building our distillery. And in order to make a nice aged whiskey, you have to barrel it and then age it, obviously. So the first thing that comes out of the still is traditional white whiskey.
Okay.
Which is pretty much what moonshine is. So, and then there's variations of it, and you can do different things with it. We weren't real happy with the character of our white whiskey, so we ended up distilling it up a bit farther, more towards the range of a vodka. So we have more of a flavor profile of a vodka, but it's not a vodka. And it's not
because
a white whiskey.
Because why? Why isn't it a vodka? What is the characteristics? What are we missing?
Vodka needs to be distilled up about 190 proof. And then a whiskey needs to be about 160. So the 160 proof is going to have a little more character. And the vodka is going to be a little more tasteless and odorless. We're right in between. There's a nice little honey hole there. So we feel like we have a really nice marriage between both spirits. It's 100% organic corn, gluten-free, no GMO. We triple distill it and we filter it. But again, it's going to have more of that vodka profile. It's going to be very silky on the palate. The finish will be very smooth. It's going to be sweet, and that's where the corn comes into play.
And why isn't it vodka, really?
Sure.
They just told you why it's not vodka. Well, I mean,
is it just the alcohol content?
And then we proof it down to 80 proof, so it's more approachable, like a vodka or a traditional bourbon. So at the end of the day, since we weren't a vodka and we weren't a whiskey, we sort of stumbled upon this concept of doing more of a moonshine, and then we're naturally sort of disruptive mentality people, if that's the right way to say it.
So you like to follow the rules.
Having spoken to you, I think it's definitely
We thought, let's go against the grain. Let's not put it in a mason jar. Let's not put it in a jug. Let's premiumize it. Let's make it sexy. Let's make it so that people like Micah and Ari can you know, have fun with it. It's a canvas for them to create really cool stuff.
They've
with.
Already passed out in the corner.
Off of the ginger beer.
So, but how did all this happen? Were you sitting around getting stinko one day and you said, let's pay homage to moonshine? I mean, so
now, was your initial goal to do a moonshine, or were you looking to do whiskey?
A whiskey.
And this sort of has taken us down this path. All three of us really were interested in creating or starting a craft distillery, and sort of stumbled upon this. As most entrepreneurial ventures go, you usually pivot along the way and find things you don't know and then capitalize on them, and that's sort of what happened. So it wasn't, hey, let's be moonshiners.
Well, what kind of research did you do? I mean, what were you looking for as you were doing this and as you learned along the way? I mean, you were not born distillers, so how did you come
I'm not sure that's true. But...
Well, you never know. So, I mean, how did you wind up here?
I think it was just a passion for spirits, mainly whiskey on our end. And like Brian was saying, entrepreneurial spirit, there's pivots along the way, and we were initially going to be a craft whiskey distillery, but that takes time. That takes, you know, years to age it in the barrel. So
and
the
money.
First thing, and money, which...
there's only so much of.
Exactly, only so much of. So... No, the first thing out of the still, like Brian was saying, is a white whiskey, essentially a vodka. So we did some digging. Our initial company name was going to be Belle Isle Bourbon. So we looked into the history of Belle Isle a little bit more, and we realized that Belle Isle is actually home to premium moonshine. So in the early 1800s, Belle Isle was home to Belle Isle Manufacturing. They were a major supplier of the booming railroad industry at the time. During the Civil War, Belle Isle Manufacturing pivoted, and they started making these high-end copper kettles. Now, during the Civil War, bourbon distilling was outlawed, because they need all that corn for the bourbon distilling to funnel into the encampments to feed the soldiers.
Okay.
So you really had a powder keg. You had all this corn in the encampments. You had the high-end copper kettles from Belle Isle. And everybody, there was a need for spirit. So they started making this premium spirit in the encampments. And this wasn't backwoods radiator pot still that's going to burn your eyebrows off. This was fit for generals, the social elite, even grace the tables at a few governor's mansions. It was a premium spirit. And that's where we came to premium moonshine. It was more of to pay homage to Belle Isle. Belle Isle Manufacturing, it being the original home of moonshine.
Now, do you flavor this stuff?
We don't. No, we do not. That's maybe down the road. But right now, we have just a very approachable 80-proof spirit, and then we'll be rolling out 100-plus proof spirit here in the near future.
Got it.
So when... How do you suggest people drink it? Is it to be mixed? Is it to be on the rocks? How do you drink it?
As you can tell from the Moonshine book, if you flip through there, it mixes extremely well in both clear and dark spirit cocktails. Whenever we suggest it to... an individual in regards to mixing, we always say mix it like a premium vodka.
But you could literally on the rocks with two olives or just on the rocks. It's very sippable, which you don't traditionally think of when you think of a more of a flavor profile or a odorless, tasteless vodka.
Right.
So
I think also moonshine people, you have to educate people on moonshine.
That's right.
People don't know what it is.
No.
They think it's like grain,
of course.
Grain alcohol.
Grain alcohol.
They just think it's strong.
But at the same time, everyone has some sort of nostalgic connection where they have a story about college or a friend or a buddy who brought over a mason jar. And so there's something sexy and appealing about it.
Well, there's something illicit about
it. That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. So that's
that
why
allure.
People...
That's my favorite word.
That forbidden.
Came back just
But it, to answer your question, you can really do anything. Whether the easiest thing to do out of the gate is replace your vodka with Belle Isle Premium Moonshine, and then you can start getting creative with more of a dark spirited cocktail.
Well, we got about a minute left. Let's talk about where you guys can be found and where you want to be found.
We're building our distillery in Richmond, in a little neat town or part of the city called Manchester, within walking distance to Belle Isle. We just moved into D.C., Maryland, and Delaware through a great distributor partner. And so we're making our way. We've partnered with a neat craft distillery out of Chicago to help us get off the ground while we're working through the regulations to get our distillery completely approved. But for now, there's a number of different restaurants around D.C., Maryland, Delaware, along with Virginia. You can check us out online at bellisleCraftSpirits.com.
Who's your distributor?
Country Vintner, the Vintner Group.
Got okay, great.
All right.
Great, and you guys are going to be at Chefs for Equality,
right? That's right, and we're excited to be at that awesome event.
Was that September 26th? Do I have that right?
23rd.
Tuesday, 23rd. Yeah, tickets are going fast.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll wake up from it on the 26th.
We'll be mixing up a great cocktail there. So,
just Leslie, who did this book?
We did. We've got a couple of really good partners that helped us with photography and the layout and everything.
Very pretty.
And
really nice.
So you can also get those on our website if you're interested.
It's called the Moonshine Book.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, it's about moonshine.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you
for having us. Make
millions. You got the Wilder Brothers here. So all right. So Ethan McKee, step up. Step up and sit down. So we met Ethan when he was at where? Circle Bistro, was it? Where were you?
Actually,
Yes.
I think Rock Creek. The first time.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
A long time ago.
And now, for about the last 18 months, you've been the man running the kitchen at Urbana.
Yep.
At the Kempton Palomar.
Let's talk about how you went, because Urbana has gone through several incarnations over the years with different chefs. How did you come in, and what kind of style did you want to present there?
When I got there last year, it was Mediterranean, mm-hmm. Italian, which is not really far from what we're doing now. It's more Italian leaning now.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we were doing kind of smaller composed dishes, and we just reopened. We had a huge renovation where we doubled the size of the bar, and we have great private dining spaces now.
But we're gonna have to take a break in a sec. But I want to get into the renovation
because
I know you guys did so much to make that happen. But I just wanted to give people an idea of the kind. Would you still consider the restaurant Mediterranean in its focus?
Definitely more Italian,
okay.
For sure. Yes, mm-hmm. We're making all our pastas in house. We have five or six different pastas on the menu at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Strong seafood focus. We have several different crudos that we're doing.
You've got the Mezzaluna program.
Yeah, so what I brought today actually is one of the pastas on the menu right now, which is mezzaluna with pork cheeks and chanterelles, black truffle.
Okay. All right.
So now that you had your dessert, you can have
pasta. All right, we're going to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Fooding the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Lean Six Sigma has been around a long time, but what are the results for federal programs and agencies? Republican Congressman Tom Latham and Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar are sponsoring new legislation to boost process improvement efforts. On September 9th, you have a rare opportunity to join them and process improvement experts from across government in a Capitol Hill event to discuss what their bill means for agencies. Sponsored by the National Academy of Public Administration and Federal News Radio, to sign up, visit NapaWash.org or email rcodat@napawash.org.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide. But only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast. We've got Ethan McKee in. The Wilders are talking too loudly in the background.
Right.
Let's talk pasta.
Right.
Okay.
It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere in the world. It's the hardest thing to make, I think, to make right. Talk about al dente.
Since he cooks so much, he can really talk to how hard it is to make good pasta.
Choking on that last drink there. But, I mean, seriously, al dente pasta is the hardest thing to, I think, arrive at and do right before it gets gooey and before it's, you know, after it's hard. So.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, especially with fresh pasta, like what we do at the restaurant, you know, it cooks really fast. You know, I think people a lot of times don't realize how fast it cooks. You know, we're talking, you know, this pasta here I brought today was in the water for maybe 2 minutes.
But you're making it all fresh.
Yeah,
right?
We're making it fresh daily, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, so it's you know, I think the biggest mistake is probably overcooking when it comes to pasta, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk. All right. So now we have some time. We can talk about the renovation. I mean, why? Guys, you're too loud over there. I can hear you.
What? We're on the radio here.
You can party afterwards. Tell us about the renovation and why they did it and how they changed the restaurant.
Well, basically what we did is we doubled the size of the bar. Mm-hmm. We had such a huge happy hour scene.
Pretty good size bar anyways.
Yeah, we had a good lounge side there. We basically took the lounge and mirrored the original bar. So the bar is double the size it was before. And then we also took the other rooms in the dining room and made them so we could close them off. So we have three different rooms that we can do private dining in now, which is great. You know, there's a high demand for that in D.C. So.
Well, especially since you're a part of the hotel, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's great. We have groups, you know, so we can do groups from 30 to 40 people in a couple different rooms. And then we have a more intimate, you know, private dining room that can do, you know, 14 or 15.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the color scheme? Like, how did it change? What does it look like? Because it was kind of dark. Is it still dark?
No, it's much lighter, much brighter in there now. But I guess you'll find out on Thursday what it looks like. But yeah, no, it's really cool. You know, it's got some really cool
doors. Are you going on Thursday?
I might be going on Thursday.
Am I going on Thursday?
I don't know. What are you doing?
I'm coming with you. I'm tired of not getting all this food.
I know, because you need more.
I do need more. Well, I want to get back to the rest of the menu. Let's go through that, because when you get past the pasta dishes, Mezzaluna sounds, you know, it sounds delicious. I just ate it. It is delicious.
Yummy. It's very good.
What else are you doing to bring Italy to the table?
You know, besides the pastas, you know, we're doing several different crudos on the menu as well. You know, it's just kind of a Italian sashimi, if you will. Mm-hmm. So right now we have a red snapper, tuna, salmon, all with different kind of little vegetable garnishes and infused oils and whatnot. And then we're doing some sardines. So really, you know, Italian food to me is really, you know, not only the pasta, but also really big about seafood.
Sure.
You know? So we're bringing lots of different, you know, really great fish and doing different things with them. You know, some barely cooked, some other different preparations.
And you're going to be doing a class?
Yeah,
we're doing 27th?
Yeah, we did a few classes last year, which was really well
you're
received.
Teach people about Amaro, is that it?
Well, I will not be doing the Amaro. I'll probably be sitting in on that one, actually.
Okay.
our bartender Lee Carroll will be teaching that class, and I'm going to be teaching a couple classes over the next couple months doing pasta demos.
Well, pasta making. So,
right.
Do people need to have all the machinery and everything at home in order to have a shot at doing it right?
Well, you know, basically all you need is, you know, a hand rolling machine, you know, or even a lot of people have KitchenAids. They have attachments for those, you know, or you can get the one that kind of clamps to the table at, you know, any of the cooking
like
stores.
Tava.
Exactly, for $50 or something like that.
But people are really sort of afraid to make their own pasta. Do you know what I mean? Because it does seem like an awful lot of work, and it seems like you can screw up. How do you entice somebody to make their own pasta? Like, what's the way to be like, this is why you should do it?
I mean, it's so simple. You know, I mean, it's just eggs and water. You know, so I mean, the recipe doesn't get any
needs a little bit of
eggs
flour
and
too.
Water and flour, exactly.
Well, I'm afraid of it. I go fetal and suck my thumb when I think about trying to make pasta.
But he does that an awful lot.
And then I go, Mommy.
And then I leave the house
and then
really
she cuddles
fast.
Me, and then we end up with another kid. It's a whole story. We'll do another show on that later.
God.
But
so,
yeah.
All right. I mean, so you bring them in there and you do you use, in other words, you use machinery that they can use at home, or are you using your special chef magical
well,
stuff?
Well, yeah, well, we do, you know, but at home, I mean, you just, you know, you have your flour, eggs, or water either way. And, you know, you can mix that with a fork and by hand. And if you have the machine, you know, you just roll the dough out. And it's, you know, it takes a little bit of practice getting used to the consistency. If it's too sticky, mm-hmm. add more flour. If it's, you know,
I think that's
dry.
Where it that's where people's fear come in.
Right.
Like they're afraid to play
well,
with it.
Well, that's where you lose it, too. I mean, if you do, if you overdose on one ingredient, you end up with crappy pasta. Hello?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, you know, coming up and learning to make pasta, you know, most of the time I didn't use a recipe. You know, it's kind of just, you know, doing it, getting a feel for it, getting a feel for the dough, you know, and the texture of it.
Well, it is. I lived with a family in Italy, then, and she made her own pasta, and she was just throwing stuff together, and it was amazing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, then you get over
well, I
the
just
hump.
Think that's how it happens.
All right.
You know what you're doing.
Go see Ethan McKee at Urbana and eat his food because it's good.
There we go.
You
it is.
Give
it's
the
delicious.
Address?
Tell Let's everybody where it is.
It's 2121 P Street, adjacent to the Hotel Palomar.
Right. Oh, wait. And you have a new happy hour as well?
Yeah. So, well, we had a happy hour before that we were doing 4 to 7. We're just doing some – we kind of expanded the food offerings there. We're doing dollar oysters, $8 margarita pizzas.
You have Negronis on tap.
Negronis on
which
tap.
Which is not, what
Negronis
are you calling
on
it?
Tap.
What are you calling it?
Draft yeah. spirits.
Right, okay. Totally different thing.
Yeah, we're going to stick with the on tap thing, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, don't, those people are crazy. Don't listen to them. All right, so thanks.
Thanks, and
thank you
for bringing in the pasta.
Congratulations for getting there. It's a great spot. Before we get back to wrap this up with the Wilders, I live in fear. I just want to thank everybody that makes this show possible, our friends at Georgetown Bagelry, the guys at Neighborhood Restaurant Group with their 8,428 restaurants I'm not going to name, Jeff Black and the folks at Black's, the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay, Mandarin Oriental Washington, the American Land Board, the Virginia Wine Board. Mm-hmm. If you didn't hear your name mentioned, shame on you. Get on board and sponsor this show for crying out loud.
Okay.
I need a new Porsche.
Well,
I don't even have a Porsche, but I need a new one.
Right.
All right, so back to you guys. What else do you want to tell us about Chaplin? You got about a minute and a half. Why else should we come there?
Wilder Bros wants a sponsor.
We're about to. We're about
really?
To,
get on it, man.
Yeah, we're really excited because we started off initially just tuning it up as a restaurant, a cocktail bar, but we had to close early, but now our hours are late. So we
Why? What did you do wrong?
We actually did everything right. We actually just got hit so hard that we had to open up the second floor prematurely but to not send people away on a 2.5 hour wait because Shaw's still blossoming, and it's really not like it's not like being on 14th Street where you can go from the Diplomat, check in, wait for 2 hours, and get a glass of wine across the street. Yet.
Terrible but, to be that successful. You have all my sympathy.
Yeah, I feel terrible.
We really hope we never get that.
Yeah, Swatch Design Team's a huge superpower in our build out, and they live right
they
there
live
in
right
America,
next door.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, like Maggie finished some new artwork, and we're really excited to open the patio and brunch. And
well, I'm glad for
oh,
you
so
guys.
So you're going to be doing brunch?
Yeah, we'll start. We're starting brunch next Sunday.
Oh, okay. And what will we see on the menu?
It'll be primarily the same menu that we, I mean, to us, like anyone that wakes up from going out the night before, they can have a huge bowl of amazing hot ramen. And to wake them up and kind of recover from the night before is always a great recipe as well as...
I don't know. I eat ramen. I want to fall over and sleep for 2 hours.
That's great. That's great.
But
if you're hungover in Tokyo, you can always wake up and cure yourself.
Right. That's true. You can. But all right.
Tell everybody where you are and how they can find
it's,
you.
It's 1501 9th Street. It's on the corner of 9th and P Street in historic Shaw neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Northwest.
Well, everything you guys out there heard of on the show today, from Osteria Marini to Belle Isle Moonshine to Chaplin to Urbana, you can find information about all of that on the list areyouonit.com, Nikki's website. Shameless plug.
You want to give me two more? Why don't you give me two more?
Yeah, you can listen to
it.
Her at 12:50 on WTOP 103.5. What 12:40? They keep moving the time around. Don't they know who you are? On Thursdays at what time?
12:10.
Who the hell knew that? Okay. Anyways, and that's about it. I'm done.
Okay. Well, we're not going to be here next week, so we are going to be playing a best of.
Where are we going to be? Oh, yeah.
We're going to be up in Brooklyn.
We got a bar mitzvah.
We have a bar mitzvah.
All right.
But the following week is going to be great. Daniel Balud is going to be in studio with us.
Mon ami.
I know. And Ashok Bajaj is coming in with Tony Conti talking about what they've got going on at the Oval
Room. I'm going to have to shower for that show.
I know.
Bam.
And Eric Platt is back in studio. He's bringing